This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
For 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary, located right here in Bethesda, Maryland. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Facero. My co-host, Dana Lake, will be returning next week. We always appreciate having you with us, and I always feel honored to be here to share information with you related to health and wellness. Village Green Apothecary is our sponsor, and they are a local health and wellness pharmacy, been a staple of health and wellness in the area for over 40 years. Right on West Cedar Lane across from NIH. So if you haven't been there, we encourage you to go. You can listen to our show every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m. And if you're not able to tune in live, you can always go onto the website, www.myvillagegreen.com, and download any of our previously recorded shows for absolutely free. Listen to them as a podcast. It's a great way to educate yourself around different aspects of health and wellness. And I'm looking forward to bringing you a good show today. I have a great special guest, as always, lined up to discuss some interesting topics with you. We're going to be talking about a specific nutrient today, and we're going to be talking about some of the issues that come up in the field of nutraceuticals. We certainly know that, you know, there are times when nutraceuticals are touted as going to be the best thing ever, the next breakthrough in health, the next anti-aging miracle. And of course, there are times when they're villainized. And what's interesting is when you actually start looking at some of the data, a lot of the work that's done to villainize natural supplements in the media is oftentimes based on very poor research and based from coming from very biased places. Now, sometimes the research is good, and sometimes we get information about natural products that we need to be aware of. There does seem to be some links, for instance, between beta carotene and previous smokers. Now, are there potentially some problems with that research? Maybe, but some of that research actually indicates that people who are previous smokers who take high doses of beta carotene may have some increased risk for lung cancer. There's some interesting research around folic acid and levels of folic acid being too high in people with certain genetic variations that may increase risk of colon cancer. Now, sometimes some of the basis of this research can actually be somewhat substantial, and we need to keep our ears to the ground and understand, you know, what is helping us and what potentially might be hurting us, because we use nutrients in a whole different way these days than our body potentially used to get them from an evolutionary standpoint. And I am somebody who utilizes all the time. I rely on nutrients to work with biochemical pathways in the body to support healing and to support the natural process of the body, which oftentimes results in resounding health for people with oftentimes very little side effects. They're considered to be very safe. Where we get concerned is there are times when natural products, as I said, are villainized in the media based on very poor research or research that's almost set up to be biased. In addition, when we look at the use of natural supplements and how they're reflected in the media, you also have to understand that sometimes the use of natural products doesn't always meet the same exact criteria that, let's say, a good trial might be done on with a drug or medication. For instance, when you're looking at a new medication, the medication dosages are usually very specific, and the medication itself, there's no variation in the medication. It is what it is. It's usually patented. It's a new substance. There's no variation on what that medication is, so there's very little room for error. For example, about, I think it was 7 or 8 years ago, the NIH ran a big study on echinacea to understand whether or not echinacea was useful for the treatment of colds or upper respiratory infections. Now, in this case, we're dealing with an herb. Okay. Now, in an herb, there are several different aspects of an herb that might be used for different medicinal values. And in echinacea, that's exactly the case. The top flowering parts of the plant have a different application in immune support than the roots. And what ended up happening as a result of this NIH study is the big headline in all of the big newspapers and all over the media was echinacea doesn't work. Well, what they did is they used the wrong part of the plant for treating the wrong kind of condition. In an instance with a medication or a drug, that would never happen because there's no variation. But when you're dealing with a natural substance, there's a great variation. And, you know, I've heard the woman who was the director of that study at NIH speak, who admitted or said that we messed up. We used the wrong part of the plant when we did this study, looking for the wrong outcomes. It was an error. But of course, the take-home message that everybody heard was echinacea doesn't work. And there's other variations. For example, what conditions were the plant grown in? Was the active ingredients of the echinacea plant standardized in this study versus another study? Same thing with glucosamine and chondroitin study at NIH. They said that glucosamine and chondroitin doesn't work. It doesn't work for people with, I think it was mild to moderate arthritis. But the reality is it actually helped people with more severe arthritis. That wasn't publicized. Just that what everybody heard was glucosamine and chondroitin doesn't work, because sometimes shocking headlines or things that get people's attention is what sells papers. Now, today we're going to talk about a nutrient that has some incredible important value in the role of health and supporting health that has been the target of some very negative news reports in the not so distant past. And our special guest today is going to really a nutrition expert who's written extensively on this topic and defending the nutrient is going to help us understand what it is, what it's good for, and the problems with some of the recent research that just came out and why it's not as valid or as useful as it was made out to be in the media. Now, Dr. Stacy Bell is a nutritional science doctor with more than 30 years of clinical experience and corporate work in the food and dietary supplement industry. She's renowned for scientific rigor, innovation, and product development, and explaining the merits of products to customers. She was formerly on the faculty at Harvard Medical School, where she conducted clinical studies, and has co-founded a functional food company, which has partnerships with CVS Pharmacy and Procter & Gamble. Dr. Bell, thank you for being on the phone with us today.
Well, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you so much, Dr. Passero.
You're welcome. So, why don't you, let my listeners know, and if you want to do any sort of editorial comments on what I introduced with the show, you're more than welcome to, because I know you have a lot of experience in this industry and seeing these things happen, you know, or we can start talking right about the nutrient we're going to discuss today.
Well, I just want to praise you for just wonderful introduction and setting the stage. There is so much confusion between who we are in the supplement field and who the other guys are in the drug field. And certainly they can be married and used together, but there are differences. And I think you outlined and explained it very well. So I feel like, you know, we got things started off to a good foot here.
Great. So let's just introduce the nutrient of topic today. We're going to be talking about carnitine. So if you could just sort of educate our listeners first before we get into any of the controversy that was around it, you know, what is carnitine? What kind of nutrient is it? What roles does it play in the body? What could it possibly support? Give us a little bit of an entree to what this nutrient is.
Right. Well, thank you very much. And I just want the listeners to know that you all picked this topic, and it was quite timely. I had just co-authored an editorial on this ingredient, and it'll be out next month in the Journal of Nutrition and Food Science. So I feel lucky to be here to talk about it. But I will say it was a very sleepy ingredient. Maybe a lot of your listeners haven't even heard of it. Certainly people that aren't up on supplements won't have heard of it. Carnitine's an amino acid, but the problem is that you never hear about it because the body knows how to make it. The brain, liver, and kidney all make it inside the body. It's not like an essential amino acid that, you know, if you don't get enough leucine, you'll die because your body won't be able to make its proteins. So it's sort of a neglected child, if you will, but all of a sudden it's become into its own and become very popular. It's carnitine, you need it, and the reason you need it is because it helps you turn food into energy. Like if you're sitting down to meat, potato, and vegetable dinner, you stare at that and you know somehow in a couple hours you're going to digest and absorb all those nutrients and then have energy to carry on your activities and then also things that the body does. It's going to help you think, your heart's going to beat, and you're going to have be able to make new proteins and new tissues in your body. So the only way you can turn food into the energy currency, and the energy currency in the body is called ATP, And that's what the body runs on. It's like it's little fuel. But the conversion of food to ATP can only happen with carnitine. So it is absolutely pivotal to get your food to do what it's supposed to. So it's got to be very important. And I think that's how evolution-wise we became as a species that we figured if we were going to survive, we better be able to make our own. So, hence, it's been the neglected child, but nonetheless very, very important for what it does.
Sure, and carnitine does have some interesting labels. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's FDA approved, but it definitely has a really good track record with lowering triglyceride levels.
Right. So what happened is, certainly I've done clinical nutrition research studies, and what happens is we end up focusing on things first that the body can't make and then giving extra amounts to people that don't have enough. So this one was sort of, again, neglected in clinical research except for people with big league heart disease. And this is where the heart vessels got really small in diameter, so the blood couldn't flow that well. Often they'd end up in a state of having congestive heart failure, mm-hmm. where all this fluid builds up on their heart. And doctors, you know, sort of thought about it and said, well, you know, maybe carnitine would help. It's this energy, you know, boosting thing, and in particular, the heart muscle responds well to carnitine, and that was all shown in laboratory animals. So over the last 20 years, there have been just magnificent studies in people with really bad heart disease helping their hearts beat better with this energy-giving nutrient, carnitine. But at the same time, as science goes, they say, well, if it's good for the worst-case scenario, people that are, you know, have really bad hearts and aren't pumping well, what about for everybody else? Can it help with lowering cholesterol and triglycerides, which are two fats floating around in the blood, and also with blood sugar? And there's studies been published to show that it lowers those as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's got some really interesting effects directly for that. I mean, of course, as you mentioned, the most important effect that it has is this energy production role. And, you know, what carnitine does, it actually is the rate-limiting step that transports these fatty acids into the mitochondria, which are the powerhouses of the cell that make ATP. And, of course, you know, the heart muscle, it's no wonder, Dr. Bell, that carnitine is so great for the heart, considering the heart is the hardest working muscle in the body. It's constantly pumping. It needs huge amounts of energy, huge amounts of ATP to continue working. So it does seem to make sense. And there is great, you know, not only studies, but just, you know, observational clinical outcomes where people who are having reduced cardiac function using nutrients like CoQ10, which we know can increase ATP production and support the production of ATP, and carnitine can do wonders for helping the cardiovascular system. So when we come back from the break, Dr. Bell, I want to get into a little bit of the controversy. We can talk about some of the other benefits of carnitine and some places where it might be useful to consider using, but let's all talk about what came out against carnitine. And I'd love to review your beautifully written editorial about why, you know, this research does not clearly elicit exactly what they're leading to, and you know, the importance of looking at both sides of the story when we see new research come out on nutrients that may be bad press. So don't go anywhere. This is Dr. Kevin Passera with the Essentials of Healthy Living, and we're going to be back right after this break.
Whether you're an active baby boomer, a weekend warrior, or a professional athlete, Boron's Arnicare Gel is the perfect solution to all life's little injuries. Arnicare, which contains the healing benefits of homeopathic Arnica Montana, can be used safely to treat muscle pain, stiffness, swelling, and bruising due to minor injuries, overexertion, and surgery. The non-greasy gel has no artificial colors, perfumes, or parabens. Arnicare is also available in cream and ointment formulas. You can find Arnicare at Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Visit Arnicare on the web at arnicare.com.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. They are the only raw multivitamin to include live enzymes and probiotics, amino acids, and antioxidants. They are gluten and dairy free with no soy allergens. Vitamin Code is uncooked, untreated, unadulterated, and binder free. Vitamin Code Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code, Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Get the one tiny pearl that delivers big acidophilus, 900% more. Get acidophilus pearls from Enzymatic Therapy. Each little pearl-shaped capsule makes a big impact, delivering up to 900% more live probiotics to the intestine than other products. This revolutionary product aids digestion, supports a healthy immune system, and is perfect for travelers who want to enhance intestinal health. This season, make sure to take the pearls that give you big acidophilus. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Staying mentally sharp means nourishing the mind as well as the body. That's why there's new Cognisure from Metagenics. Research shows that the active natural ingredient in Cognisure supports multiple mechanisms necessary for maintaining healthy cognition and a healthy brain as it ages. Cognisure is also easy to take in delicious, chewable chocolate tablets. Have a clear and bright future by maintaining mental capacity with healthy habits and Cognisure. Remember Cognisure for healthy brain aging support. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Want to save money on vitamins, herbal remedies, and other healthcare needs? Then visit Village Green Apothecary during the big summer sale. Now through July 17th, you can save big on vitamins, herbal remedies, and other nutritional products. Save 30% on the popular Top Quality Pathway brand. Save 25% on other supplements, and save 20% on body care products. At Village Green, they have just what you need for a healthier lifestyle. Stop by Village Green Apothecary's big summer sale, 5415 West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, Maryland, or shop online at MyVillageGreen.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary, located right here in Bethesda, Maryland. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Passero, and as always, it is an honor and privilege to be here. My co-host Dana Lake will be returning next week. We're here every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m., bringing you the best of health and wellness every single week, and we certainly appreciate you tuning in. Village Green Apothecary is located here in Bethesda, Maryland on West Cedar Lane. They're the primary sponsor of our show, and they've been serving the community for over 40 years, delivering expertise in health and wellness. If you haven't been in, please stop in. It's a great resource for people. Wonderful products. I have a full-service pharmacy and compounding pharmacy. It is one of the most full-service compounding pharmacies in the entire country, so it's a great resource to have right here local for you. Today I'm talking with Dr. Stacy Bell. She has been in nutrition science doctor for more than 30 years. She has more than 30 years of clinical experience and corporate work in the food and dietary supplement industry. She was formerly on the faculty at Harvard Medical School, where she conducted clinical studies. She's co-founded functional food companies, has been involved with the supplement industry for a very long time, so we're very lucky to have her expertise on the phone with us today. In the last segment, we introduced the topic we were discussing, the nutrient of the day, which is going to be L-carnitine, which, as Dr. Bell alluded to, is sometimes a nutrient that's not as well known as other nutrients in the natural science world. So, Dr. Bell, thank you for being on the show with us today.
Well, thank you very much. I'm so honored to be here.
Yeah, so, you know, in the last segment, we were talking a little bit about L-carnitine and what it does and some of its mechanisms of action. I'd love for you to expand a little bit on what this little-known nutrient does and how important it is for the health of our cells.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I mean, most people know it. If they've ever heard of it, they know it for cardiovascular disease. But what's interesting to me, and sort of reviewing things again for the show and in general, it does a lot of other things. And what is most important to me is that when you eat food and convert it into ATP, your energy currency, one of the byproducts is a toxic form, a toxic form of oxygen. And that's just the way we evolved as a species, that, you know, you make a little food and you shoot off a little toxic form of oxygen. Sometimes you'll hear it as oxygen-free radicals. And that's okay. And if you eat a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, you're not going to have too much of a buildup for this. But one of the problems is this energy conversion takes place in a certain part of the cell called the mitochondria. And that tissue can get damaged right away, right after each cycle of producing ATP. The magic of carnitine is that it's not only a carrier of food into the mitochondria to make energy, but it also interferes with that oxygen radical and squelches it, gets it so it's not in a toxic form. So probably the best thing you do, you certainly want to eat fruits and vegetables and get a wide variety of antioxidants from that. But the carnitine in particular is magical because it's right at the cellular level and right at the mitochondrial little membrane where it's working to protect the body.
Yeah, very important place for it to be working and a very important place for us to have antioxidant protection. So what are some of the other roles that carnitine plays in health? I mean, we've talked about its role in producing ATP and how important that is for, the heart muscle and muscle in general, because muscles use a lot of ATP as far as working, how they work. And we know that a lot of L-carnitine is stored, particularly in the heart and skeletal muscles. But are there any other key areas of the body that carnitine seems to play an important role in supporting?
Right. So the obvious next segue is, well, if you're exercising, you may get some benefit from carnitine, certainly for cardiovascular disease. But what was extraordinary to me is that somehow it works on the brain and the nervous system, and it's able to even promote possibly nerve generation and reduce pain with people that have disruption of the nerves. So let's just take a good example is something called peripheral neuropathy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what people get that usually have type 2 diabetes and often have elevated blood sugars for long periods of time. And over time, sugar damages the nerves, and it happens on the periphery, like your fingertips and your toes, before it happens inside of your body. It's just the way the thing presents itself. And also some people with HIV infection or getting chemotherapy, they also get these peripheral neuropathies, fingers and toes, tingling, which leads to pain, which leads to potential amputation because there's no blood flow there anymore. The carnitine has been studied and shown at modest amounts, just 1 to 2 grams a day, to help increase the blood flow, get rid, having a protective antioxidant effect, and helping people reduce the pain that have this condition, and also even experience nerve regeneration. And the reason I highlight this condition is that I've seen so many people with this problem, particularly a lot of patients with diabetes. There is no treatment. It's painful, and it's not like you can go off your medicine chest and get a prescription from your drug, from your doctor. It doesn't work that way. There's nothing there. So what I like often in natural medicine is sometimes there's the answer right there at a modest amount that certainly no means aggressive would have any effect on harm and may do some benefit. So that's a good thing. The other thing that was interesting to me, there were studies on Alzheimer's and depression, and I'm not here to say it's going to cure either condition, but again, given carnitine can work magically on the brain and central nervous system and these nerves, it also showed to help with improving learning in Alzheimer's patients, again, taking a modest amount, 1 to 3 grams, and again, with people with depression, a little less than a gram a day will improve symptoms of moods. And these were both studies, and there were multiple studies in Alzheimer's and in depression, where they were beautifully done just like a drug study would be done, where there would be standardized testing, and then the subjects were tested before and after carnitine. So I think there's something magical besides the heart with carnitine, mm-hmm. in that the brain and the nerves also benefit from its treatment.
Yeah, well, it certainly makes sense. Anything that would support the production of energy or ATP in the body and also be an antioxidant may play roles in multiple areas of the body. We know that the brain, produces more oxidative byproducts than just about any other organ in the body because it's so metabolically active. And that's why we, see that antioxidants can oftentimes be so beneficial for the brain in conditions related to the neurological system because of all that oxidative damage that comes, because the brain is a powerhouse of metabolic processes. We know that, even though it accounts for a very small amount of our body weight, it consumes a vast majority of the glucose resources that circulate in our blood and in our body. So we know that it has that ability, and using something that is antioxidant and something that also supports energy, it would make sense that might happen. So thank you for pointing that out, Dr. Bell. It's always nice to hear some of these other areas where carnitine may be useful, and you'll oftentimes see it in some of those formulas that people formulate for brain health or nerve health in addition to cardiovascular health. Now, I mean, as you've talked about, we're discussing, in moderate doses, 1 to 2 grams a day, you can take L-carnitine and we can have these benefits. And, what we haven't said is, is it safe to take? And this is where the controversy comes up. And this is where I'm really excited to have your expertise. Now, people may not have seen this pop up, but I imagine over time, the research that brought some of this to light will be referenced again and again and again when things about carnitine that are positive have come up. So the question is, Dr. Bell, can you take L-carnitine at these moderate doses that have been shown to support the health of the heart, to support the health of the nerves, and to support the health of the brain without doing harm to yourself? Is it safe? And that's what the research was challenging. Now, I'm going to use it as a teaser because when we come back from the break, this is what I want you to explain. Is L-carnitine a safe supplement to take? The people who are saying that perhaps it isn't, what is their basis for saying it? And is the basis of that research actually accurate? So when we come back from the break, this is what we're going to discuss. Don't go anywhere. This is Dr. Kevin Pacero with the Essentials of Healthy Living, and we'll be right back.
Megafood Premium Whole Food Supplements are the only supplements crafted from scratch with farm-fresh whole foods to deliver nourishment the way nature intended. Megafood believes Mother Nature knows best. They select only fresh whole food, harvested at the peak of ripeness, handle it gently and with care to deliver its vital essence to you in every bottle. Megafood, from farm to tablet. Our name is our promise. For more information, visit us online at megafood.com.
Zymogen is pleased to announce the arrival of Fit Food, a delicious, high-quality functional food that's formulated to support weight management, healthy body composition, glycemic management, cardiovascular and immune health, and more. Each delicious serving of Fit Food contains 21 grams of pure New Zealand-sourced bioactive whey protein, 6 grams of fiber immune-supporting oat beta-glucan, and additional glutamine, glycine, taurine, and MCTs. Fit Food provides holistic support for today's active body. Learn more at Zymogen.com. Available now through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
All over the world, people are beginning to discover fish oil is one of the best secrets for unlocking great health. Thousands of studies have shown the amazing effects of these powerful omega-3s for heart health. Plus, fish oils have even been shown to balance moods and lessen anxiety. With exceptional taste, unrivaled freshness, and unsurpassed purity, Nordic Naturals is the easy way to get your omega-3s every day. To learn more, visit Village Green Apothecary or visit NordicNaturals.com. Nordic Naturals, committed to the planet, committed to pure and great-tasting omega oils.
The brain requires nutrition just like the rest of the body, and this is where Gero Formula's Neuro Optimizer comes to the rescue. Neuro Optimizer is a concentrated source of nutrients needed for memory, mood, concentration, and focus. Neuro Optimizer supplies the building blocks for neurotransmitters, the chemicals that allow cells in the brain to communicate and to file away memories. Neuro Optimizer is the nutritional answer to the brain's needs. To learn more about formulas, visit Gero.com. Gero Formulas, available at Village Green Apothecary.
Do you have unique needs that a mass market pharmacy can't handle? Village Green Apothecary can help. Maybe your doctor prescribed a special compounded formula for you, or you have concerns about allergies or dietary supplements. We invite you to talk with one of our compounding specialists today. Our team of 50 includes pharmacists, nutritionists, a clinical herbalist, and a naturopath offering customized products and personalized healthy living plans to ensure your well-being. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Pacero, and we are discussing L-carnitine on today's topic of the show. We're here every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m. bringing you the best related to health and wellness. Thank you for tuning in. It's always an honor and a privilege to be here with you, sharing information regarding how to live a healthier and better life. I encourage you to go to www.villagegreen.com and log on to our archive show section. You can download any of our previously recorded shows for absolutely free and listen to them. Last week, I was on there and I downloaded Dana Lake's show a couple weeks ago with Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, MD, doing groundbreaking work with integrative therapies for cancer care. It was a great show. Dana, as always, did a great job, and Dr. Gonzalez was a phenomenal guest. I love going back, listening to the shows that I don't record, the ones that Dana does, and getting a wealth of information. I really encourage everybody to do that. Now, as we've been talking about carnitine, Dr. Bell, we've been discussing up until this point all the benefits of carnitine. We've talked about how important it is for heart health. We've talked about how important it is for nerve health, how important it is for brain health. But now what we want to talk about is some recent data that came up. And I don't know how many people in the general public, you know, really understand or not understand, but have been exposed to it. But I know when this study came, I had all my colleagues and friends and people interested in nutrition emailing me the link to this article. Can you explain what happened with carnitine, you know, what this research showed and why people were all excited about it and maybe some of the issues with the research?
That's right. I got a million emails too. People saying, "What are you doing? You know, you're interested in natural products." And certainly, up until a couple months ago, there were, you know, I looked up. There were 2,000 articles on carnitine, and 600 of them were in people and taking amounts of carnitine that were getting benefit from. So I was flummoxed when this one came out that said, no, 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 all those 600 articles or 2,000 articles are wrong, and in fact, it's not good for you. So here's the deal. The group of investigators, and really there's only two studies involved here that looked at the effect of blood carnitine levels in humans in predicting whether they would get a heart attack or stroke or have some other major cardiac insult. And it turns out that people with high levels of carnitine and high levels of another substance, but I'll get to that next, had higher risk of getting a heart attack, a stroke, or dying from heart disease.
Right, and that's funny because it's right directly in contrast to what the other studies have been showing about carnitine and heart health.
Hello, that's what happens, and that's why it hit the, you know, the press, and they say, hey, this is it. So then the investigators said, well, you know, is this causal? You know, you have high carnitine, does that make you get a heart attack? Well, it's not clear. They didn't show that. They just showed a relationship. But what they then started working on to say, is it really carnitine or is it really something else? And it turns out when you eat foods containing carnitine, and foods that have carnitine in them are mostly protein-rich from animal sources. So meats and dairy have the most of it in the diet. So they focused on meat. So like beef, pork, chicken, and such all have higher amounts of carnitine than having a vegetable. So when you consume these meat proteins, you digest the food, and you produce in your large intestine a substance, TMAO, and it's too long a word and it's not relevant, but this substance gets produced by your intestinal bacteria. You know, we have in our colons, we've got lots of bacteria. We've got good guys and bad guys, but who's ever living there, in people that eat meat, this substance, this TMAO, is produced. And what the investigators then showed was that people that have high levels of this TMAO floating around in their blood and also in their urine have an increased risk of heart disease. So the doctors go, the researchers say, hey, this is a no-brainer. You eat meat, it has carnitine. The carnitine produces a rise in TMAO, and that produces your increased risk of heart disease. So it was sort of a slam dunk. You know, no problem. Red meat's bad for you, and it's not bad for you on the mechanism of raising your cholesterol, which is the standard story, but rather because your own body's bacteria, when it sees red meat, will produce this TMAO substance, which increases your risk of heart disease. So, you know, that could have been the end of the story, except there's a couple problems. First of all, the one that got me, because I'm a dietitian, was that turns out that seafood, when you eat fish, you produce more of this allegedly toxic substance, this TMAO thing. You produce more TMAO with seafood than you do with red meat. And I defy anyone to say that seafood is bad for the heart. It just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful thing for the heart. So to me, that was sort of one of the problems with the study. I don't know how they got to these results, and they did do very pretty study and you know, looked very believable on the surface, but that fish thing they're going to have to deal with, because fish is obviously protective of the heart. So that's one thing. The other thing that is in a sort of a burgeoning area of nutritional research are the intestinal bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly when I started nutrition, you know, 30, 40 years ago, we didn't even know there were bugs down there, let alone appreciate that the bugs were there. And now with certainly doing the genetics of the different bugs that are down there and looking at the different profiles of what bugs are residing there. Meat eaters have different bug profiles than vegetarians. Obese people have different bugs than lean people. And the list goes on and on. You got something wrong with you, you likely have a different bug, you know, milieu than you do if you're healthy. So what I'm worried about is then people that eat meat regularly and maybe eat high quantities of it, maybe their bugs have sort of moved around and the big producers of the TMAO substance may be living there to digest this carnitine that's coming to them on a regular basis and producing a lot of this substance, which begs the question then, what happens if we gave some probiotics, some healthy lactobacillus and bifida strains to correct this disbalance and see if we couldn't then correct and lower the level of the TMAO substance?
Was it pretty clear, Dr. Bell, that the TMAO substance did, you know, really, were they able to identify the mechanism in which it contributed to heart disease? I mean, is it clear that that substance is the causative factor, or is it still just a relationship?
Yeah, it's still causal because they looked at, you know, surveys of people with heart disease and then, you know, looked at what happened. So that's always causal. But that's certainly the first step for provocative research.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean, I appreciate that just because it's produced in a small amount doesn't mean it's not bioactive, but boy, it's produced in a really small amount. So mm-hmm. I'm always worried that how, you know, we have 20 or 30 years on carnitine data being supportive of the health of the heart, and then all of a sudden, you know, a couple papers come out and say, whoa, this is bad for you, you know, it just doesn't work because of this substance that's in nanograms or picograms, you know, just a little bit of stuff floating around the body when there's all sorts of other things that probably have a stronger effect on how long your heart's going to beat and how happy it's going to be when it's beating. So cardiovascular health probably has a lot of other things related to it, and this may be there or may not be there. But I think I'm not totally convinced, and I'm also not convinced that it's not fixable. I think you can fix it with possibly probiotics and also dietary fiber. I'm worried that, you know, people that eat a lot of meat may not have a lot of vegetables on the side. They may, you know, have a big 16-ounce steak and have a rather low-fiber diet. In fact, I don't even have to pick on the meat eaters. Americans eat 50% of the recommended fiber amount, which is, you know, 15 grams rather than 30 grams.
Mm-hmm.
So if the bacteria aren't adequately fed through dietary fiber, which is the mechanism, you eat fiber, gets down to the large intestine and feeds these little bugs that are living in your intestine anyway. If they're not getting the nutrients that they need, they may, you know, go off and be sort of wayward children and not behave appropriately. So I think it's not the jury's still out, if you will, certainly with, you know, just one or two studies changing the 2000 that preceded them. We're not there yet.
Sure, but it certainly gets a lot of press. And, you know, I mean, I about 3 weeks ago, I did a show that was totally devoted to this idea of the gut bacteria or the bacteria in our body and how important it is. We know that basically for every one human cell we have about 10 bacterial cells that outnumber it. So we're made more of bacteria than we are even of our own cells when you look at just sheer numbers of genetic material and cell counts. And the research on how these bacteria are affecting our health is just really becoming quite intriguing and interesting, at least from my standpoint. You know, I know 8, 10, or 10, 11 years ago, it was starting just to see information about, well, these bacteria might be helpful for people with irritable bowel syndrome and these conditions that are very specific to the gut and where these bacteria live. But now we're getting information and research that these bacteria affect a much broader range of health-related issues, including, as you mentioned, obesity, diabetes risk, heart disease risk, chronic inflammation, which is involved with not just heart disease, but also certain types of cancer. And, you know, just the general effect that they have, not to mention that 70% of our immune system is located within our gastrointestinal system. And these bacteria play an integral role in interacting with our immune system. And there's great data showing that people who supplement with probiotics, take them regularly, especially in good research in children, showing they have lower incidence of upper respiratory infections, suggesting that these good bacteria actually help to modulate our immune system in a positive way, which is a really important part of staying healthy. So it is quite interesting to think about what other factors are involved in this aspect of eating meat on a regular basis beyond just the presence of carnitine in the meat and the production of TMAO as a result of that carnitine. And I think, Dr. Bell, that's exactly what you're trying to point out and what your editorial suggests, you know, that you sort of cite all of the great literature and great research that's been done on carnitine and the remarkable effects it's had on cardiovascular health, and then just making such a linear connection between the fact that meat has carnitine and carnitine makes TMAO and TMAO is correlated with heart disease, maybe a little bit too narrow of a way of looking at or judging this nutrient and its role in health.
Exactly. And, you know, the problem is it's very noisy, and I don't like noise. I mean, there's vegetarians that excrete a lot of this TMAO as well as non-vegetarians. So then you say, well, how can that be? How can both of them be excreting this substance? It should have been cleaner. It should have been cut and dry. But I want to go back to this. I'm glad you did a show on the probiotics because this science is just exploding in terms of what's out there. What was interesting to me is part of the study took meat eaters and vegetarians and gave them 3 weeks of antibiotics, which, as all your listeners know, it's going to kill out all your gut bacteria, and then they have to reassemble. You know, the gut bacteria have to come back after the antibiotics. And after the antibiotic uses, the people that were meat eaters had seven times higher, more TMAO produced than previously before they had the blasting with antibiotics. So one of the things that tells me is that this TMAO, if it's important for increasing your risk of cardiovascular disease, it's affected by things that happen in our lives. Sometimes you need to take an antibiotic, and when you do, you get a disruption of your gut bacteria, which we all know. Mm-hmm. And it sort of, again, ties it back to if we do believe the science, can we still eat meat? And I think you can, but I think there more studies are needed to say maybe you have to take high fiber and right. maybe you have to take probiotic supplementation to overcome this TMAO issue if it's really an issue.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the way that our bodies were designed, I mean, if you think about the way that our bodies evolved, meat was something that you had to hunt and kill. And it was something that you probably had exposure to or resources of that was a little bit more rare than the fruits or vegetables that you collected or foraged for that were high in fiber. And if you had or were lucky enough to get meat and be able to preserve it and keep it, you probably, our ancestors ate it sparingly, knowing how valuable of a resource it is. And now you fast forward where we have diets that are so predominantly meat heavy, it can definitely shift the bacterial flora and can potentially shift the whole way that our body interacts with meat. You know, at least that's my thinking on it. And it is unbelievable to me the research being done or what it's showing on these bugs in our gut and how they can affect our health when they're even doing in human studies where they take somebody who's obese with insulin, you know, resistance issues, and they actually do what's called a fecal transplant, which sounds absolutely disgusting, but it's basically they take the gut flora from a healthy thin person through the stool and they can infuse it. And this is not weird science. 10 years ago it was, but I can tell you right now that these same type of experiments in fecal transplants are being used at top medical institutions, including Johns Hopkins University. I know for a fact that Johns Hopkins University Gastroenterology Center has done fecal transplants to treat conditions like inflammatory bowel disease, like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis. So this is becoming more mainstream medicine because over the years, the research has been showing its benefit. And what is wild to me is if you take somebody who's thin and in shape and you do a fecal transplant into somebody who's obese with insulin resistance without really changing their diet or their exercise patterns, they will start to lose weight and become more sensitized to insulin simply because they have a gut flora that is more prone to that. We have never seen research that I am aware of that is really showing the profound effect of that bacterial balance in the gut and the major impacts that it can have on health in so many different ways. But we're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, Dr. Bell, I want to pick up this conversation. We can talk about some other interesting studies that have been done, some other controversies out there that I'd love for you to explain and elaborate on. And we'll wrap up the conversation around carnitine. This is information that everybody who takes natural supplements needs to know about, because you need to be educated on the fact about when you hear these stories, whether they're positive or negative, what do they really mean? And I think this was an important lesson in what it can really mean. So don't go anywhere. This is Dr. Kevin Pacero with the Essentials of Healthy Living, and we'll be right back.
The moment you feel achy or run down, nip flu-like symptoms in the bud with Boron's Acylococcinum. Clinical studies show that Acylo, when taken at first signs of flu, reduces the duration and severity of flu-like symptoms such as headache, body aches, chills, and fever. For 65 years, families throughout the world have relied on Acylo. It works safely and naturally without causing side effects like drowsiness or interacting with other medications. Keep Acylo on hand and feel like yourself again. Acylo is available at Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Visit Acylo on the web at acylo.com.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. That's right, raw. Made with the highest quality standards to preserve raw nutrients, uncooked, untreated, unadulterated. They are binder-free with no fructose, maltodextrin, magnesium stearate, or cornstarch. With live enzymes and probiotics, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code, Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Wondering how to turn your bedroom into a hothouse? The answer is Hot Plants, the natural herbal way to make sex fun, vibrant, and satisfying. Two unique formulas, one for him and one for her, were developed by Chris Killham, the medicine hunter. Chris's book, Hot Plants, features these exciting products from enzymatic therapy. Hot Plants, from the science of enzymatic therapy, now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Some things are hard to stomach, and life doesn't stop for occasional immune challenges or intestinal distress. Probilarty from Metagenics offers a new, targeted probiotic approach for intestinal support. Help maintain control while traveling or as a follow-up to antibiotic therapy to support intestinal flora for healthy intestinal function. Probilarty provides ID-certified probiotic strains suggested by research to enhance certain aspects of immune function, in addition to promoting a healthy balance of intestinal microflora. Probilarty is the go-to probiotic for patients on the go. Get it today. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Have you ever wondered why the cold and flu season occurs in the fall and winter months? One theory is because of a decrease in sun exposure, our bodies don't make enough vitamin D, which is essential to proper immune function. That's why medical experts recommend supplementing with vitamin D. Thorne Research's vitamin D products are made from pure vitamin D, with no preservatives or unnecessary ingredients added. Support your immune system with Thorne's vitamin D1000 and D5000. These and other immune-supporting formulas are always available at Village Green.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Pacero, and I thank you all for being here with me today. We're here every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m., and if you can't tune in live, you can always go on to www.myvillagegreen.com. If you click on the microphone icon on the right-hand side of the homepage, you can get to the archive show section, where you can download and listen to any of our previously recorded shows for absolutely free. It's a great resource to educate yourself on all sorts of different topics related to health and wellness. I told you in the last segment, just listened to a great show last week, streamed it on my phone, in my car, while I was driving on my commute, and it was the interview that Dana Lake did with Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, who is an integrative medical doctor in New York, who's been doing work with integrative cancer care and pioneering work in that field, and it was really a great interview. He was a great, captivating guest with lots of great opinions and really interesting stories. So examples like that, we've got a whole archive show section of shows like that that go back over 5 years with some of the top doctors in integrative and natural medicine from across the country. Today, we've been talking with Dr. Stacey Bell. She's a doctor of nutrition science. She's got over 30 years of experience in the nutrition and supplement field. She was on the faculty at Harvard University, and she's just got a great expertise and has been helping us understand some of the controversy around carnitine. And really, I think what the motif of the show has been, Dr. Bell, I think you would agree, is, you know, it has to do with these ideas that you can see 20 years of good solid research on a nutrient, and then all of a sudden you can see huge amounts of press on a nutrient all of a sudden saying that it's the worst thing for you, and if you take it, it's going to kill you. And you know, I think it's important to look at, critically assess all of the literature, and not to discount any research that says something is potentially bad, but to really look at it in detail to understand what that really means. So, you know, we were talking in the last segment a little bit about how important these gut bacteria are. I think you had some important points to wrap up on that. And then I'd love for you to discuss a little bit more about how people out there as consumers and people interested in supplements and natural health can better educate themselves when they see these stories so that they're not, you know, afraid. Everybody always says it. I hear one week that this is good for you, in the next weeks, this is bad for you. I don't know what to believe. Helping people to understand how they can better assess things for themselves.
No, you're exactly right. Just the one caveat I wanted to add to the gut bacteria, because I can't make it any more clear that this is a hot area. What was interesting to me is patients got their stomach stapled. They were obese subjects. It's called a gastric bypass, and it's got some other last names to it. But basically, the pouch is made smaller, and the intestine is bypassed, so you don't absorb all your food. And this is for morbidly obese people, people that are twice their ideal body weight. And when they started, the researchers measured what their intestinal flora looked like, and they had pretty much predictable of what heavy people had. And after the surgery and after the weight loss, usually they drop 30, 50 pounds within the first year, the bacterial flora changed. It changed to be like a thin person, which is extraordinary to me, because maybe they ate a little healthier, but or maybe there's something in the brain controlling what bacteria can survive given a certain body weight and which can't. So I think you're going to see more about it, that, you know, you not only you are what you eat, but you're also whatever is residing in your intestine. And for now, until the research gets any better, and certainly those of you that consume meat, my advice is take a good probiotic every day and also get adequate dietary fiber. And the body doesn't care whether the fiber comes from real foods or from a supplement, and probably both is the best to make your at least 30-gram goal there.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point. Certainly taking probiotics is useful. There seems to be limited data on actually the ability of probiotics to create long-term shifts in gut flora. It really seems that, you know, you've mentioned fiber, and we're not talking just, you know, eat fiber because people have been telling you to eat fiber for 30 or 40 years. This is really specifically related to the fact that fiber is one of the most important nutrients to support a beneficial gut flora. So fiber actually becomes what's called almost a prebiotic. It's the food, or it creates the environment in which the good bacteria in the gut grow, and is actually one of the best ways to foster healthy gut bacteria to support optimal health. So I just wanted to point that out. So Dr. Bell, let's talk about some other recent, you know, sort of controversies or some other recent stories that have been promoted in the media that are, you know, sort of telling people that certain nutrients, you know, maybe aren't so good for you, particularly after years and years and years of research showing that they potentially are.
Right. And you alluded to some in the beginning. That I'll talk about vitamin E because I've written on that in the past. A paper came out of John Hopkins claiming that it had reviewed all the literature on vitamin E and showed that, in fact, vitamin E, you know, increases your risk of developing cancers. And people were taking vitamin E before that because it was supposed to be good for your heart, and people were taking large doses, and it was always in multivitamins. And it turns out when you look at the literature, first of all, development of cancer was rather speedy. It usually takes 10 years for a tumor to develop. Yet in this person's research, you know, it was developing in 2 years. So I always say, you know, call me silly. It had nothing to do with the supplement. It had to do with either they had a pre-existing condition that was just unidentified. So I don't think there was much merit in that. But more what really bothered me, and I'm happy that people did a great literature review, and on the surface it looked like a wonderful study. But in reading each of the articles that was reviewed by these investigators, I noticed that the vitamin E was not always the same form. So it would be like saying this group got vitamin E and that group got vitamin K. It wasn't like they were comparing the same beast, if you will, or the same nutrient. The problem with vitamin E, and it's not really a problem, it's just the rules in the U.S., are that in order to label vitamin E on the bottle, you have to use alpha-tocopherol. And alpha-tocopherol then turns into IUs on the bottle, or milligrams, however it's presented now. So, but that's not natural vitamin E. If you had a palm fruit, which has 8 isomers of vitamin E, has tocotrienols and the 4 from vitamin E. That's how vitamin E exists. That's how we evolved as a species, eating all of those 8 isomers, and that's what's protective and healthy. Now you take out one of the 8 because the government tells you that that's the only thing you can label, slop that in, and of course you're going to get different results than the studies that used either the 4 isomers of E or used all 8 of the natural compounds of the tocopherols. So when you read these studies, you know, at first blush, you know, you're not going to find it, and I certainly didn't find it until I went back and read the individual papers and then got to think about it and say, this just doesn't make any physiologic or nutritional sense.
Exactly. And sometimes they can do things where they do a meta-analysis where they pull the data from a bunch of different studies. And it's interesting, meta-analysis can be some of the most accurate types of ways of evaluating research, but it can also lead to some bias because you can select, you can selectively choose research projects that had bad outcomes, where although you may have, you know, 1,000 studies that were done, maybe 10 of them had really poor outcomes, and only focusing on that 10 will present really and highlight the bad outcomes, not looking at the general picture. And research can be so varied. You know, this idea that research and science always gives us the truth, it's not always the case. Statistics can be manipulated. Research can be manipulated based on people's bias, and you see that all the time in science and the pharmaceutical industry and the nutraceutical industry, depending on who's writing it and what is in their best interest. So talk a little bit about, Dr. Bell, one of the new ones on multivitamins that just came out.
Oh, yeah, this gave me another headache, like the vitamin E. So I'm, you know, on Sunday drinking my coffee, reading my New York Times, and Dr. Paul Offit wrote a op-ed on the in the magazine section about, you know, basically vitamin multivitamins will kill you. So my husband, you know, passes it over to me, and he says, see what you're doing. So, you know, I read the article, and it's the same thing where you sort of cull through a few articles like this vitamin E paper. Then they had the Iowa Health study on women that showed the multivitamins were shortening their life, and a few other things, the beta carotene, like you mentioned. And you assemble those together, and you write well, and it makes the New York Times because, again, it's controversial. So, you know, I'm scratching my head thinking, now, how did this all happen? So the first thing I did, we have a snooping system on medical researchers that we can look up and see, you know, sort of what the scholarship background is of people. And this man's perfectly nice. He's head of the Pediatric Infectious Disease and Vaccine Center at Penn. And, you know, he's published a few articles in his own field that demonstrate that he's got scholarship. And then he's written 3 articles bashing the dietary supplement industry, which I'm not convinced is totally scholarship, particularly after reading his editorial in the New York Times. So what he failed to see, we've done vitamin E, but let me talk about this Iowa Health study with the ladies, and there was a difference in death rate of multivitamin users and not. And but if you read the rest of the article and the discussion, the authors of the study said, hey, women that were dying sooner had 2 nutrients that were really causing the death. First of all, they were taking iron, which is a no-no, and everybody in our field knows that women over 50 don't need exogenous iron. They hold on to what they have. They're like men now. They don't, in terms of, they're not losing any blood every month, so they don't need anything, any extra iron. And in fact, it's potentially harmful. And in fact, I think that's what this study teased out. So putting those women together. And the second one was mega doses of folic acid. If you're out of your procreating years, which these women were, they were over 50, they don't need mega doses of folic acid. That thing was for, you know, it's good for women of childbearing age to prevent spina bifida and other neurodegenerative diseases, and it works there. But that doesn't mean that it's good for everybody over 50 and people that aren't having babies. It had no bearing at all. And so you're able, with big studies and thoughtful researchers, to tease out what the problem was, and that's good because that will lead to a correction and hopefully reformulation of products to be clear that if you're old, here's the multivitamins you should take based on the mixtures that was compatible with life.
Right, and that's why, as I said, it's not that every single study that says supplements are bad should be immediately recounted and said, oh, they're just trying to beat up on the natural medicine industry because, you know, it's pharmaceutical and it's about understanding the real data and about evaluating. Unfortunately, sometimes it's hard to get answers, which is why it's always great to utilize a resource like this show or be tapped into good blogs or good websites that are really giving you the truth about both sides of the story and evaluating these studies so that you can really understand exactly what they're telling us without bias. And paying attention to that, because there is a movement to reduce folic acid supplements in certain people because it can cause problems. And we've known that iron isn't good to give in high doses. So we're out of time, Dr. Bell. Thank you so much for being on the show with us today. Really appreciated having you on and sharing with us all this great information.
Thank you so much, Dr. Passeo. It was just a wonderful experience.
Great.
I appreciate it.
All right, everybody, that wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back in a couple weeks, Sunday, 10 to 11. So this is Dr. Kevin Passeo with the Essentials of Healthy Living, wishing you all the best of health. Until next time, take care.
Ah, the joy of commuting in Washington. Whether you work on the Hill or outside of the Beltway, you know how stressful it is to get around. Stress can take a serious toll on your health, and Village Green Apothecary can help. We offer over 10,000 healthy living products, including top-quality nutritional supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Our nutritionists and pharmacists are here to advise you about creating your very own individualized healthy living plan. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda, 5415 West Cedar Lane, or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Are you looking to go abroad and make a difference? Consider volunteering or studying abroad on a YFU gap year to Thailand, Romania, or Ghana. Earn course credit, live locally, and become a global citizen. YFU offers gap year as well as summer, semester, and year-long programs to 40 countries. Call 1-800-TEENAGE or visit YFUUSA.org to learn more about Youth for Understanding study abroad programs. Change your life. Change the world. Youth for Understanding. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas.
AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Trade talks could be scuttled, and the U.S. relationship with the European Union could be at risk as a German magazine.